Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 24th. I'm Ray Graff. On today's program, we get some financial advice from Bob Catterbury, Senior Wealth Advisor at BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. Bob has 30 years of financial planning and wealth management experience, including investment planning, risk analysis, asset allocation, investment selection, and retirement planning. So if you have a question about your finances or your taxes, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Bob Catterbury and your finance calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today, we get some financial advice from Bob Catterbury, Senior Wealth Advisor at BST. Bob has 30 years of financial planning and wealth management experience, including investment planning, risk analysis, asset allocation, investment selection, and retirement planning. So if you've got a financial question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Of course, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And it's just like the calls. First come, first serve. 800-348-2551. Bob Catterbury, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good afternoon, Ray. Thanks for having me back.
A lot has gone on since you were here the last time. The paramount among them, the $1.9 trillion stimulus, the American Rescue Plan, is passed. A lot of people already have that money in their accounts. Anything your clients might need to know on an individual level?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of information that has been confirmed and solidified over the last couple of weeks since that legislation was passed. Most people seem to be aware of the $1,400 per person cash payment that has been allocated. And as you mentioned, some folks have already received that if you qualify for it. There are certain AGI restrictions and limitations, Ray, for folks to receive that. And one of the changes this time around, compared to the last couple payments that came out, is that children that are on a parent's tax return as a dependent, even if they're over age 17, would also qualify for that $1,400 payment. So to give you an idea of the amount, if I have a family of four with two children under the age of up to 17, then that would be $5,600 for that family. If there's a family of five, two parents, three children, that would be $7,000.
Yeah.
So the amounts are significantly increased from what they were in the past, generally $600 in the past. And many folks, as you said, Ray, may have already received that in their bank accounts.
You know, one of the other things that happened just in the last week or two was the tax filing deadline was extended to May 17th. And I wondered if you might explain why that is and how that is connected to the American Rescue Plan.
Sure. Well, I can tell you that all the accountants and CPAs at my firm are relieved to have a little more time.
Yeah.
May 17th is the new deadline for filing. And I think part of the reason that happened was because the stimulus package kind of overlapped and coincided with tax time, generally April 15th. And there's a lot of confusion, Ray, about eligibility, because if you have not filed your 2020 tax return yet, then that stimulus package that we've talked about, the amount you receive in some cases may be based on 2019 tax return if you haven't filed yet. Now, a lot of folks have already filed. Generally, it's a good idea to file early if you're expecting a refund,
right?
You want to get your money back as quickly as possible. So if you already filed your 2020 tax return, then in some cases, the amounts you receive are based on that as opposed to 2019 tax return. So I think it was just a wise decision, you know, by the IRS to extend it basically another month to allow people time to file their 2020 tax return. And if that's the case, then that may, in some cases, allow you to receive more money, perhaps, than you would have under 2019's version.
Bob Canterbury joins us today. Financial advice, if you need some, Bob is an advisor at BST. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And Bob, we'll get to the calls in just a moment and an email or two, but just a couple more things that have happened since you have been on that perplex the average person quite a bit. And frankly, if I never hear the words GameStop again, I'll be quite satisfied. But explain to me what the heck was going on there.
Well, that was quite an interesting phenomenon, and it actually continues, as you said, to come up a little bit here and there. Basically, what happened was there were a bunch of hedge fund managers on Wall Street a few months ago who had made a big bet that GameStop would basically go bankrupt and their share price would bottom out. And there was a gentleman on Reddit who incited his followers, basically, and a lot of video gamers, apparently, maybe a younger generation. He encouraged people to go out and actually buy GameStop stock. And what that did is it caused the price to skyrocket, which many were kind of chuckling and not really feeling too sorry for those hedge fund guys on Wall Street. But the stock went way up. And not long ago, it actually went from, I think it was $18 a share up to $350. But it's been a roller coaster since then. It actually dropped back down over the next several weeks, back down below $100. And then it went back up to $270. And I think as of today, it's down $33 a share, back down to about $150.
Is that sort of manipulation legal?
Well, that's a good question. I can tell you that the SEC, based on what happened, is taking a closer look at how certain groups, right, certainly can have their opinions about a particular stock, but artificially influencing, you know, those types of outcomes, in my opinion, can be, you know, a little bit damaging and risky. So I know folks that had made out very well, but I also know folks who got in late in the game and the stock price plummeted again. So it's not as easy as it sounds. It can be a roller coaster ride. And also what happened in there, Ray, and a lot of people were very upset, is that some brokerage firms stopped allowing trading during the day. So all those millions of people that were trying to buy or sell GameStop stock couldn't do it because they stopped trading, which not a lot of people know this, that if you sign a contract with a brokerage firm, they do reserve the right to stop trading periodically. So there were, you know, screams about lawsuits and things of that nature. I think there was a firm called Robinhood who was caught up in that trade stopping. So it's just been kind of a crazy roller coaster ride since that all happened. And it continues, apparently, you know, right up to today.
It's amazing. I mean, what pretext did they use to say, okay, we're not going to have trading during the day? It seems to me it's such an arbitrary decision that it is questionable.
Well, that decision is really up to the head of the brokerage firm to do that. And I think what happened was that there were margin calls for those big Wall Street hedge fund managers. There, when that many people buy GameStop stock, then the funds have to be available from the people that were selling. And that caused the stop because it was billions of dollars that needed to be transferred. So I think they basically got a little bit scared about that and stopped trading temporarily, I believe, for a few hours. But again, that created quite an uproar.
Bob Canterbury joins us from BST. Financial advice today on the program. One more topic to handle, and then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Andre in South Egremont, hang in there. You will be first when we get to the calls here in a second. You know, today, I think it was today, maybe it was yesterday, Elon Musk said, all right, at Tesla, we're going to accept Bitcoin now. For those of us who are ancient and nearly mummified, explain to us what Bitcoin is and what sort of shockwaves that has the potential to send through economies worldwide.
Well, I did hear that I can now go out and buy a Tesla with Bitcoin. For those of you that might be lucky enough to own or have some, I did find that quite interesting. I will qualify, though, that I think you can only do that if you live outside of the U.S. So it's not quite available to those of us living inside the U.S. I think that Bitcoin is a very kind of mysterious area for most folks who are not familiar with it. It's considered a cryptocurrency, and it's been around for almost 10 years.
Yep.
But it has become very prevalent and popular this year in particular. It's kind of an interesting concept. There's a limited supply of Bitcoin available. I think it's right now about 21 million Bitcoins, if I'm not mistaken. But that can change periodically. But it's all kind of managed and traded and transacted on a network system called blockchain. And blockchain keeps track of who owns Bitcoins, who they're transferred to. There are certain passcodes and passkeys that are only available to the owner. And I've heard stories about people who lose their passcode or pass away, and the money basically is just irretrievable. It can't be passed along to others. And so it's not considered a traditional investment by any stretch for those who have presumably worked hard for retirement savings. It's considered risky for sure. It's classified as an alternative investment, you know, an alternative from traditional stocks and bonds and things like that.
Yeah.
And the negatives can be that the fees are high. So if you're lucky enough to be able to acquire or purchase Bitcoin, first of all, that can be a challenge because not all brokerage firms will allow you to buy Bitcoin, right? There are certain exchanges that do.
Yeah.
Some people didn't realize that you can purchase fractional shares of Bitcoin. I think if you own one full Bitcoin today, it's worth about $56,000, $57,000. And here's what's attracted people, Ray. If you bought one Bitcoin back in July of 2017, as of September 3rd of last year, it would have been worth $2.2 billion with a B, which that's astronomical. It's actually up 93% more in 2021. So you can see the attraction, but it's generally not something that the average person can get into. It's not regulated by the government currently, and a lot of people feel that it's used for, in some cases, criminal activity. It's not guaranteed by FDIC insurance. And one article that I read was kind of an interesting analogy. They said that Bitcoin is like going to the fair, where you pay a fee to get in and you can experience rides and food and different services. But those tickets are not really good anywhere else outside the fairground.
Interesting.
So I thought that was an interesting analogy. But you're right. Apparently, outside of the U.S., I could use Bitcoin to purchase a new Tesla automobile if I wanted to.
All right. Well, let me know how that works out for you. We'll take a quick break here. Bob Canterbury is our guest, and we'll get to your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Finances Today with Bob Canterbury. The number is 800-348-2551. And we start out with David in Albany. David, you're on.
Hi. My question is about unemployment insurance and the stimulus package. I started collecting unemployment late last year, and I understand that the first $10,000 is going to be tax-free.
That is correct. They recently announced for 2020, for those who have adjusted gross income, however, has to be under $150,000. And okay. If that is the case, then the first $10,200 of your unemployment benefits will be tax-free, whereas previously unemployment benefits used to be fully taxable. So that is correct.
Okay. Part two of that, is that going to be, or do you know if that's extended into 2021 or that's just for 2020?
Right now, that's just for 2020. I suppose okay. It's possible that they might extend that, but right now it's just for 2020.
Okay, and last question related to that. I have a friend that filed his taxes very early, and he was basically in the same situation. So he, I am assuming, would have paid taxes on the unemployment. What should he do to, or is he able to get that rebated?
Yeah, good question. This comes up quite a bit. So for those who may have filed early and not receive the full benefit or cash payments that you're entitled to, what's going to happen is that there'll be some sort of credit adjustment or refund when you do next year's tax return. So for 2021...
Okay, so that question will appear, and it'll be adjusted then.
Yes, yes. So you won't have to amend your tax return or anything like that. They're just going to make it up to you in the next tax return in the form of a credit or perhaps a tax refund.
All right, David, thank you very much for the call. Bob Canterbury joins us today. 800-348-2551 is the number. This email came in actually about 20 minutes before we started, and this is from Becky in Northville, New York. Becky says, I have some extra savings from selling my home. What do you suggest is the best way to get the most from this extra $50,000? Is there a non-retirement investment account I could put the money into?
Well, first of all, congratulations on selling your home, and that sounds like a nice little profit there. If Becky is looking for a non-retirement type of investment account, okay, so just by comparison, most retirement accounts like IRAs or 401ks, you can invest on a tax-deferred basis. But in her case, if I have proceeds from the sale of my home, it's considered generally like a taxable brokerage account. And under those circumstances, traditionally, Becky could purchase some stocks or bonds or mutual funds or ETFs. What I would generally suggest is taking a look at all of her assets, even though she mentioned in her question that it was a non-retirement account. I think that still probably works lockstep with her other savings and other investments. So, for example, if she was more on the conservative side, let's say with her retirement savings, she might prefer to be a little more aggressive with her outside taxable account. Because remember that in a non-retirement taxable account, if I buy a stock or a bond or a mutual fund and I own it for a while and then I turn around and sell it, I benefit from capital gains treatment. Mm. In a non-taxable account, which could either be 15 or 20%, and that's generally lower than your tax bracket. So I would suggest that Becky take a look at some of the traditional investments that are out and available, but be sure to complement that with your other savings.
Bob Canterbury joins us today. Financial advice on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. The number, Adrian in New Paltz. Adrian, you're on.
The ETF world seems to have been growing lately. Could you describe basic differences from a regular mutual fund compared to an ETF? I know you can buy them and trade them on the exchange, so it's an open deal. It's not like you're signing up for a managed portfolio. But right. And then there's these leveraged and inverse ones that are being touted by some of the more volatile firms. They look pretty interesting, but I'm not going anywhere near those, I don't think, and I probably don't think you would want me to, correct?
Well, that's a good idea. Usually I tell clients if you're not quite sure what you're getting into or what it is, then it's probably not right for you. But you're correct that ETFs or exchange-traded funds have also become much more prevalent for two main reasons, Adrian. Number one of the big differences with ETFs compared to mutual funds is that I can sell. There's intraday trading with ETFs. So, for example, if I wanted to buy something at 10 in the morning or at noontime, I can buy or sell ETFs just like I could during the day, like a stock. Mutual funds, however, as you probably know, always trade at the end of the day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So if I sell a mutual fund at 10 a.m., nothing really happens until 4 p.m. anyway. So there's more flexibility, I think, for people to buy and sell ETFs during the day. And then the other part that I think is favorable is that generally expense ratios and fees are generally a little bit lower than you might see with some mutual funds. So for those two reasons, they become very popular. And I'll actually mention this, is that in my client portfolios, one of the institutions that I use for my client holdings is automatically converting, I think it's six of their existing mutual funds, they're converting those automatically over to ETFs in early June. So it just gives my clients flexibility if we decide we want to sell them, and generally it's going to lower the fees for them as well. So hopefully that helps.
All right. Yeah, great. Fine. And expense ratios do seem to vary quite a bit. It can be 0.04. It can be 0.4. they're quite a bit of spread in those expense ratios.
You're exactly right. And it's always a good idea to research, you know, what the expense ratios are so that maybe you can compare a few and buy a similar performing fund with a lower expense ratio. And that's more money in your pocket.
Adrian, thanks for the call. Why is the expense ratio so different from one to another?
It generally comes down to the amount of trading and research that need to be done. Most ETFs and mutual funds have a manager or a team of managers whose job it is every day to buy and sell stocks and bonds. And the fee for marketing and publicity and the research, that's generally where that comes in. So if you have a huge billion-dollar fund that requires a lot of media attention and marketing, you know, those expense ratios, those fees might be a little bit higher than, say, a lower-cost fund.
Bob Canterbury joins us today with financial advice on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Karen is in Massachusetts. Karen, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I have a question on just the turmoil in the market. I put all my my 401k money, which is about $1 million, back into money market, and then I wanted to dollar cost average new money in. I do have other monies, about $400,000, in very risky stock market type situation. So I just wanted to hold on to this 401k business because it's a real retirement, and you know, just this time where it's so volatile. I just want to know what your thoughts were.
Well, you're certainly not alone. A lot of people have mixed emotions, certainly, about what they should do with their 401k. And I field calls virtually every day about folks who are uneasy when the market takes a dip. You know, yesterday I think it was down 300 and something points, and that's when the calls roll in. But you have to take a look at your 401k and your retirement goals on a longer-term basis and not try to predict or project what might happen in the next 6 to 12 months. That's lesson number one, is as a financial advisor for my clients, I want to find out when they're going to retire and when they think they're going to start drawing from their retirement savings. And if that time frame is more than, let's say, 3 to 5 years, it's okay to have a little bit in the stock market. It's enough time to hopefully recover from any losses that you might see in the stock market. So, for example, we all know that the first quarter of 2020 was terrible. The stock market was down 30 to 40% in some cases. And I did have a handful of clients who just emotionally couldn't take it anymore. And even though I tried to caution them and tell them to tough it out, they couldn't do that. And so they took their money out of the market and they lost out on the recovery for the next 9 months of last year, which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So those folks, just as an example, last year that basically did nothing, you know, ended up way ahead than those that try to time the market to get in and out. And that's easy for me to say, right, because it's not my money. But it's a big battle for a lot of people on the emotional roller coaster. You know, you feel like you should be compelled to do something if the market does drop 5 or 10 or 20%. But history has proven that if your time horizon is long enough to ride that out, then you're better off just trying to ride it out, not making any emotional decisions. And specifically for your question, if you already did pull money out of the market, now it's even a tougher decision, right? Because it's at all-time highs, and it seems like the worst time to get back into the market. However, I will tell you this, that a lot of economists, and I guess as an advisor myself included, I think that the remainder of 2021 is going to be pretty good, because you can clearly see that the president and Federal Reserve, they're trying to do everything possible to get the economy back on solid footing after what we've gone through with COVID and everything and unemployment. So there's a little bit of concern for 2022, right, with a level of debt that we've incurred and accumulated. You know, how are we going to pay for that? There's a little bit, a slight concern maybe about inflation, but not really for this year, mainly for 2022. So I do think there's room for more growth this year with the optimism, with the vaccine, business owners hopefully getting back on their feet. So hopefully that helps. It's not an answer to how do you time the market, but I think that's hopefully a little bit of guideline for most folks on how you should approach things.
Bob Canterbury is our guest, and if you have a question, the number is 800-348-2551. Kathleen in the Berkshires. Kathleen, you're on. That's an impressive array of sound effects you have
there. My question was about the unemployment, which you answered, but will tax programs, the free programs, be, will they allow it to not be taxed, like Free Tax USA or?
Well, most states, if that's your question, most states will probably follow the federal guideline, which will treat the first $10,200 of unemployment
right.
as tax-free. And also, this might have been part of the other gentleman's question earlier, is that they did extend a $300 extra unemployment benefit through September 6th of this year. So for those who may mm-hmm. still be collecting unemployment, it should be an additional $300 over and above what your state unemployment benefit is. And then you've got that $10,200 tax-free benefit on the front end of that.
Okay, because I did a preliminary on Free Tax USA, and it was taxed, but I haven't submitted it. So I'm wondering when I go back to finish it, whether it's going to
adjust for that,
accommodate that.
Yeah, I'm
but
not
if
sure
it doesn't,
if
I'll
all...
get it next.
Yeah, I'm
right.
not sure if all
okay.
tax programs that you're using, like there's several out there, Tax Act and TurboTax and Pre-Tax USA,
yep.
they might not have updated
yep.
their system yet to treat that unemployment benefit. That's my guess.
Kathleen, thanks a lot for the call. What about the expanded child tax credit? That will not be on the taxes we're about to file now. That's for this current year, right?
That's correct. For 2021 only, there are some significant child tax credits and dependent care credits that folks will see when they file their tax return in April of 2022. So specifically, there's a child tax credit of $3,600 for children under the age of six and $3,000 for all other qualifying children on your tax return. So that's quite an increase from what it was previously. Again, it is available for children up to age 17. And the one thing to note about that child tax credit, yeah, even though it's for next year, is that it's fully refundable. And what that means is that in some cases, if a credit is not fully refundable, that means that it could bring your tax liability down to zero, but that's the most you would get.
Uh-huh.
In this case, if it causes you to go into a refund situation, then you'll actually get a refund, possibly, from this non-refundable child tax credit. So that's a good thing.
Bob Canterbury is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Vox Pop Financial Advice. More of it coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Bob Canterbury joins us today from BST. He is a senior wealth advisor there. And if you have a financial question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Bob, a few email questions here, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one is from Scott in Sunderland, Massachusetts. Scott says, concerning the stimulus payouts, I filed my 2019 taxes in October with an extension. It was a paper filing. It has not yet been processed. Neither has my son's, who I also sent in. I have not received the $600 payment from the end of last year. I also have not received a payment from the current package, also, I believe, because of the same reason. Do you have any idea how to resolve this? The IRS is unreachable. We've talked about this before. I had a notification last time I looked to not try to contact them about this, and that is from Scott in Sunderland.
Yeah, unfortunately, with paper filers, that's a tough spot to be in because they are so bombarded and overwhelmed with the stimulus package this year as well as last year. I have heard of those same frustrated individuals who have not received anything as a result of that. And unfortunately, the only suggestion I would have, and it sounds like Scott may have done this already, is if you go to the IRS.gov website, there is a place there that you can go to track your stimulus check. And it sounds like if he submitted his return in October, he's probably going to see there that they just haven't reviewed it yet or haven't approved it. So unfortunately, there's really not anything else to do but wait. I think eventually he will get what he's entitled to for 2019, of course, and then when he files his 2020 tax return. But unfortunately, the IRS is just overwhelmed, I think, and has lots of folks in that same situation.
Okay, this one's from Dee in Altamont. Dee writes, is a wife entitled to receive benefits from her husband's benefits? My bank account was credited with benefits. Now Social Security says the money was sent in error. The money is due back to them. I'm confused. And that's from Dee in Altamont.
It sounds like her question was about Social Security benefits.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, and so the difference may be between retirement benefits and survivor benefits. So I'll clarify that. Let's say that both spouses have worked and have a working career. They are both eligible to receive their individual retirement benefit, you know, based on their working career. And if one spouse passes away, then the other spouse is eligible for the greater of their own benefit or the survivor benefit if that's larger. So in the event where a spouse does pass away, it's always advisable to contact Social Security, and they will tell you right away which one is higher, and generally you can start receiving the bigger benefit right away. Now, in her case, it wasn't clear to me, her question, if her spouse had passed away or not.
Doesn't say.
Yeah, so in that case, if they're just both retired, they would both get a check based on their career earnings.
Okay, this one is from Edward, and this goes back to Bitcoin. And Edward writes, how can something that has all transactions forever recorded be used for illegal transactions? There are a number of investments linked to crypto. Fidelity offered buying stock in companies like Grayscale. If you don't have direct access to apps like Robinhood, Cash App, and Coinbase, that is. And that is from Edward.
Well, you know, I guess he's asking my opinion about, you know, how can Bitcoin possibly be used for criminal activity?
Yeah.
Well, what I can tell you is in India, they are considering criminalizing possession, mining, and trading of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. So, you know, I don't personally know why they would do that. And I do agree that with blockchain, there are certainly sophisticated ways of tracking. But I think it mainly stems from the lack of no FDIC insurance and no real government regulation at this point. So I suppose that's to be determined then.
I guess what I don't understand about the whole thing is, to me, looking from the outside, it looks like a house of cards. In other words, before rampant fiat currency, the dollar was backed by something. Is Bitcoin backed by something?
Well, that's a good question. It really is based on the perception of value to those that hold Bitcoins. You know, there are other interesting tidbits that I've heard. You know, people ask, you know, do you sell it or can I get it through you? And the answer is no. I don't have any of my clients that have Bitcoin. I typically use the bigger brokerage houses, and we can't get it through those brokerage houses. I have heard, believe it or not, that there are Bitcoin ATMs somewhere.
Okay.
I don't know where they are, but that sounds like a really strange concept to me. So you're right. I've heard stories early on about the system being hacked. I think it was by North Korea, supposedly. So those types of things scare me. As it's just not a traditional trackable investment like we're familiar with, and I guess for those reasons I tend to be a little cautious on, especially when it's other people's money.
Bob Canterbury joins us. One more email and then back to the phones. This is from Natalie. Natalie says, for those who have not yet filed 2020 taxes, did the stimulus package include any new tax changes different from 2019 we need to know about? They've been employed, by the way, Natalie says they have been employed throughout the entire, so there's been no unemployment.
Okay. No unemployment there. Well, the 2000, she's asking about 2020, it sounds like. She hasn't filed her 2020
correct.
Tax return
yes,
yet.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. No, I think for the most part, you know, the stimulus checks are considered tax-free, although when you go through the system, they're going to ask you, did you receive stimulus check number one or stimulus check number two
yep.
or both? And you have to plug in the amounts. And that will kind of impact your tax refund, depending on whether or not you did or did not receive it. Like the gentleman earlier, I think he said he filed in October and he had not received his. So he would put that in if he is filing his 2020 tax return. But overall, in general, there aren't any significant differences as far as the form goes and what you have to report. There were a couple of other things, Ray, that I wanted to mention about this American Rescue Plan.
Yeah.
A couple other tidbits that might be helpful for the listeners. People ask all the time about student loan debt and debt forgiveness.
Yeah.
Supposedly, that's going to be part of the longer-term economic proposal. The $3 trillion proposal that came out the other day,
mm-hmm.
That's a longer-term plan the forgiveness of student loans was not part of this American Rescue Plan that just came out.
Right.
But one of the things that they are mentioning in this American Rescue Plan is that if student debt is forgiven, then that is not going to have to go on your tax return as taxable income.
Correct.
So it's kind of setting the stage, I think, that there's going to be some sort of student loan debt relief. And I keep hearing $10,000 might be the number, you know, some point in the near future.
Okay. Bob Canterbury is our guest. And back to the phones, Sandy in Rotterdam. Sandy, you're on.
Hi, I kind of tuned in a little bit late.
Okay.
And I was just wondering, I filed my taxes already, and I also had some unemployment that I filed. Did I miss out on something by filing so early with my unemployment and also my stimulus check?
Okay.
No, I don't think you missed out. If you did file early, and I think you're referring to the first $10,200 of your benefit that would be tax-free, that applies, assuming your AGI was under $150,000, it would probably be made up and adjusted for when you do your tax return next year. So that probably will be adjusted for her automatically.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Sandy. And over to Kendall in Grandview. Kendall, you're on.
Hi there. My question was about NFTs, these non-fungible tokens, and whether or not you think that they are a good investment and something to get into. I've seen them popularized recently, and I know that they're being traded with cryptocurrency, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I can barely say non-fungible token, NFTs. That sounds like it's in line consistent with other, you know, cryptocurrencies that, as you know, I'm a little bit guarded about. None of my clients, you know, own or have that. So I'm probably going to take a pass on that as just it's not familiar enough to me as to really comment about NFTs.
Okay.
Sorry.
Kendall, thank you very much for the call. And we go now to Joe in Southern Vermont. Hello there, Joe.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I actually just had a quick question, and it was a little bit specific. Like, I have a lot of problems with the economic system today and how they're hurting the individual who saves by pumping so much money into the system, and they just keep printing money. So I've been looking at cryptocurrencies and alternatives to fiat currency lately, and you know, as a lot of my friends and people I know have. But one question I had was, they asked a specific question on your tax return this year, if you purchased any cryptocurrency. And if there's not a structure to actually tax purchases of cryptocurrency, do you have to answer that question on your tax return?
I didn't know that. What do you think, Bob?
I do know that question is on the return. I don't know exactly what they do with that information. What I can tell you is that they're trying to have some methodology, because any gains that someone has in buying and then selling cryptocurrency, that's taxable income. So I think right
sure,
now
government
there might
needs
be some
a piece of everything, right?
Yeah. Not to agitate you any further than you already were when you called. But
I appreciate the advice. I'm only kidding, but
yeah.
So that unfortunately,
you know,
I think there's. Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize. One other question along those lines is, like, with the cryptocurrency stuff, is there any end in sight to, like, you know, just endless printing of money and devaluing the currency? And how, you know, we've gone from, you know, when my grandparents were, I was brought up by my grandparents, my grandfather worked, my grandmother stayed at home, one person's salary could support a whole household, things like that. And, like, things have just totally changed to the point where both parents have to work, you're strapped even if you do. It's like, you know, they tax you endlessly on every little you try to get ahead, they catch up to you with that. Like, will politicians ever act responsibly in an economic sense? I guess that's a pretty broad question.
Well,
sorry, but
there's an open-ended question, Joe. And I tell you, we'll have Hugh Johnson back on and Aaron Pasitti and some economists. We do that every now and again, and we'll talk yep. about that big picture. We have brought that up before, but thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, with 4 minutes left in the show, I think it's unfair to Bob Canterbury to start that. Daniel in Albany. Daniel, you're on.
Okay. Speaker, there we go. Yeah, I had a question about the earlier package, relief package last year in the spring. I thought there was, or I thought I heard that there was a provision for not having to pay the penalty, the 10% penalty on early withdrawals from retirement funds.
Yes. There was something called the CARES Act last year.
Yeah. Yep.
That did allow, I guess they were terming it COVID-related or hardship-related withdrawals without the 10% penalty. That's correct.
Okay.
The right. issue that I've seen with that is when anyone takes a withdrawal or distribution from a retirement plan, they yeah. generally issue what's called a Form 1099-R, and
right.
that form basically says, oh, Mr. Johnson took a distribution. Now, in order to make that free from the penalty, you have to fill out the appropriate form to tell the IRS that this was a COVID or hardship-related withdrawal and don't hit me with a 10% penalty. So make sure that you file the correct form that matches up with that 1099-R, or else the IRS might come knocking and say, hey, this shows you took a distribution, and you probably don't want to have that happen.
You know the name of that form, number of that form offhand?
I believe it's Form 8806.
Okay.
And there's a list of other exceptions to the 10% penalty on that form as well.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, you're welcome. Daniel. We appreciate the call. Now, we only have just less than 2 minutes. Let's go to Jeff in Statsburg. Jeff, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm just asking about news from about a year ago. I heard the governor had some kind of a commission that it was about arranging for investors to be able to prevent the housing prices from dropping or something. They were going to be buying distressed properties or something. Does this ring a bell of any kind to you?
No, not really. I vaguely recall something related to distressed property and real estate, but to be honest with you, I'm not familiar with that, and that's not really in any of my clients' portfolios, so I'm sorry, I don't.
Jeff, thank you very much. Very quickly here, Sam in Kingston. Sam, you got about 30 seconds, buddy.
Going back to the CARES Act, that extended the pandemic unemployment assistance, which also extended the New York State unemployment. Does
yes.
this new bill do the same way, or is it just an extension of the pandemic?
I believe it's an extension of both through September 6th. So it's an extension of 300 additional plus the pandemic unemployment, both, yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Sam, thanks
You're
a
welcome.
Lot. All right, Bob Canterbury, how do people find out about BST? And you guys are on the web, right?
Yes, they can look us up on the website. BSTwealthmanagement.com is specifically the site. BSTCO.com is our accounting firm website. So either way, and our phone number is 518-459-6700, and our receptionist could direct you if you have questions.
Hey, Bob, thanks a lot for being here. We really appreciate it, and good luck with tax season. Even though it's extended, I hope you get through the next month or two.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Ray. Have a good afternoon.
All right, buddy, we'll talk to you soon. Support comes from Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. And Sun Common, committed to a clean energy future, locally owned with over 15 years of experience, offering solar for homes and businesses and backup storage with Tesla Powerwall. SunCommon.com for details. Once again, thanks to Bob Canterbury for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the calls. Thank you for the emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Now, our phones today,
It's very funny when we have financial guys on, our CFO, Jordan Yuxall, comes and screens the calls, and I see him over there furiously writing down notes and coming up with his next financial scheme. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh, this is fun. So we'll get out our thumbs, wherever they happen to be, and we'll turn them green, and we'll do some gardening. Right now, that's tomorrow at 2, by the way. Right now, it's 51%.